Hello, and welcome to the Accelerated Culture Podcast, a sonic journey through the vibrant and revolutionary sounds of the 1980s and 1990s. In this podcast, my co-host and I will dive deep into the era of new wave and alternative music, exploring the infectious beats, introspective lyrics, and groundbreaking experimentation that defined a generation and left an indelible mark on the music landscape. Join us as we unravel the stories behind the music that shaped an era. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Accelerated Culture Podcast. I'm Lori.
And I am Scott Free.
And we've got a special episode lined up today. We had mentioned in our previous episode that Carl Wallinger had passed away. He was the lead singer and songwriter for World Party. And since we're on 1990, we figured we would do an album deep dive on World Party's album, Goodbye Jumbo.
Ah, it is just such an amazing album and a document of its time, but looking backwards at the 2 to 3 decades before it, Carl Wallinger was a student of pop music and rock music history and a massive fan of the Beatles, but not just the Beatles like he sometimes gets pigeonholed for. And this album is a love letter to pop and rock music.
Ooh, well said.
And hugely important to my own 1990, my college experience. This album was a big part of the soundtrack to, 1990 for me.
Right. Well, I'm really looking forward to discussing it with you. But before we do, I have a couple shout-outs.
Shouts out?
Shouts out. Thank you, Professor. Okay, so first we got an email from somebody named Gary.
What up, Gary?
He writes, "You two are awesome. I just listened to your episode on Violator. You hit it out of the park. Could you consider including a Cocteau Twins album like Heaven or Las Vegas? Thanks." Love that album, Scott. It's 1990. I think we should.
I'm down.
Oh, cool. All right. So that will be...
It will be a little bit difficult to discuss the gibberish that is sometimes the Cocteau Twins lyrics, but hey, we'll dig into it.
All right. So Gary, thanks for the suggestion. I believe Gary might actually be in the Chicago area as well. So local boy.
Gary will sit up there.
Yeah. And then another local boy I want to give a shout out to, a gentleman I met whose name is Golden, who is a big fan of 80s alternative music, especially The Cure. And so I believe he is listening. So hello, Golden. Thanks for joining us.
How's it going, Golden? Hope you enjoy the show.
One other quick note before we get started, Scott. I do want to let everybody know that we have just started a Patreon. And if you would like to support us, $5 a month would really, really help us offset some of the costs of like web hosting and stuff. And
keep us from having to work these horrible day jobs.
Oh, that wouldn't that be wonderful? Yeah, so if you like what we're doing and you'd like to contribute, check us out on acceleratedculturepodcast.com. And there's a link there. Support us and it'll take you to the Patreon. If you can't donate, that's great. Then, give us a like on your podcast platform. Maybe leave a little review, help other people find us. That would be fantastic.
Yeah. If you can't donate, just say something nice and, I got nothing.
Well, then let's start talking about Carl Wallinger. Last episode, Scott, you told me something that I didn't realize, that he had right around 2000, 2001, a brain aneurysm, right?
Yeah. Apparently, in 2001, he suffered a brain aneurysm, left him unable to speak. He had to basically rebuild, relearn how to speak, sing, relearn how to play his instruments, and he did. He did recover fully and eventually went back to touring with World Party. And you can see videos of him after that recovery, and looks and sounds great.
Well, I had absolutely no idea, and we had seen him. I looked up the date. It was May of 2015 that I saw him. So all right. he would have recovered at that point, but I had absolutely no idea. You know, I mean, he was at peak form. It was a really fantastic, it was an acoustic show, but it was just gorgeous.
Right on.
So, yeah, I mean, God, you know, you got to admire somebody for picking up and starting over like he had to do and keep moving on and making music, you know?
For sure. He loved music, and it stands to reason he loved not just listening to and making, but playing it. So you got to admire the dedication to the craft and dedication to the lifestyle that brought him to where he was.
Yeah. So that brings us, I suppose, to Goodbye Jumbo.
All right.
Which was released in 1990. And, you know, I confess, I hadn't listened to this in about 30 years.
Really?
Yes. And so when Carl died, I went back and I listened to it again. And boy, there's a lot of stuff I didn't remember.
When you and I talked and we were trading notes on this album, getting ready for the show, I said, you know, I feel like the album maybe drags in the second half. And having given it several listens since then, I think that's not entirely accurate. It is the classic front-loaded first half that all the singles came from. So I know when I was listening to it back in college, I would listen to the first half quite a bit and wouldn't always make it to the second half, but there is some rock solid stuff in there. A couple tracks that maybe we could say not as strong as the rest, not willing to go so far as to say they are filler, but oh boy, that first half is a powerhouse.
Well, Q Magazine in the UK called this album the best album of 1990. I don't know if I'd go that far.
Album of the Year is a big, big award. Granted, it's from Q Magazine, but still, it's an incredibly strong album. Whether you want to call it Album of the Year or not, that it was getting that kind of critical acclaim in a year that produced a lot of great music, it says a lot.
Yeah. So I have not been able to find a lot of information either about Carl Wallinger or about this album. And I've been digging for about a week now. And I'm usually, my research skills are usually pretty good. So
yeah, you got skills.
I don't know if it's because he was such a private person that he didn't like do a lot of interviews or stuff. Or, yeah, I don't know. So I kind of feel like my research is really lacking on this one. But you found some stuff.
I did find some things, you know, some of the basics, the stats that we like to talk about here and there. It was not a smashing commercial success. It was far from unknown, and it made a lot of lists, a lot of critics' lists for it was big album of the year, but it did reach number 36 on the UK albums chart, and that's not too high, but still respectable. Made it to number 73 on the Billboard 200. Not a knock-it-out-of-the-park commercial success. But the critics loved it, the people loved it, and MTV, very important, in 1990, loved it. So you got to see two or three of the big singles in video form on MTV, particularly during the alternative show of the time. 120 minutes? Or
yeah.
And, you know, Carl Wallinger was visually, he made for good TV. Like, World Party got a lot of press as being a throwback band, particularly to the Beatles. And with that mop of hair, with the sunglasses that he always had on, he did have a certain John Lennon-esque thing to him. So the videos, yeah, they had that throwback thing that in 1990 was working for him.
Okay. So he was not only a singer and songwriter, but very, very talented multi-instrumentalist. As a matter of fact, most of the instruments on this album were him.
Yeah, he was holed up for 3 years in a London industrial building that he had a studio in. It used to be a bakery. And he spent a lot of time on a 24-track recorder recording most of the album himself. But yeah, okay, so he had come off of Private Revolution, where he played pretty much the whole album. The debut album that came out in 1986, it was mostly him and a 16-track recorder, and had bassist Martin Swain and keyboardist Guy Chambers playing with him. But he talks about, on that album at least, how he was playing almost all of the instruments himself, and because he was also doing the recording, he played almost everything in the mixing room, except for the drums, where he would have to put a whole long bit of leader tape at the beginning of the tape, hit record, and then dash into the recording room to play the drums. Here, he had a bigger budget, and he had more musicians playing on the album with him, but still, he is doing the bulk of the work. Incredibly talented musician, and he was the musical visionary, so he knew what he wanted, so he played it himself, largely. Now we'll get to it in a little bit. There's a good quote that includes that bit about the studio, but it's more in the context of the lyrics. So,
all right. So the album was released on April 24th, 1990.
Just a few days before my birthday.
Yeah. You got a birthday coming up.
Ew.
I got you something.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's a compliment.
Yeah. So the cover is really bizarre, right? Okay. So Goodbye Jumbo, obviously title of the album. Couldn't find anything about why he called it that. But, you know, at first glance, you look at the cover, you think it's an elephant, but then as you look at it, you realize it's actually a man in a gas mask.
You know, although it is a guy in a gas mask, it definitely has the, I mean, they make it look like it's an elephant. And the videos from singles from this album all prominently feature footage of an elephant in them. And one of the themes of this album and of World Party's early work in general is one of environmentalism and sort of a green revolution and the consciousness of an oncoming ecological tragedy, calamity, if you will. Which, luckily, in the interceding 34 years since Goodbye Jumbo came out, we have completely managed to avert, and everything's fine with the environment now. So that worked out great for us. I'm kidding, we broke the planet.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, there's some darkness in this one between the aneurysm, Carl's recent death. But what we can do is celebrate his work. And
yes,
that's like as good a time as any to get into the deep dive.
Let's do it.
I track and see why Goodbye Jumbo was on many critics' lists of the best album of 1990.
Fantastic.
All right. It is a strange but amazing opener to this album. Comes out strong and lets you know what kind of album you're dealing with by doing it with a song that is nothing like the rest of the album. First track is It Too Late?
Talk about biting the hand that feeds. Sitting there watching as it bleeds. Try your best in the winter light, when it really should be summer night. Is it too late, baby? Too late now. Too late, baby. Too late now. Too late for you to realize everything could have been all right.
Yeah, you know, I'd totally forgotten about this one. So it starts off really kind of weak with some drum samples, and you're thinking it's going to be one thing. But then it comes in with these rock and roll guitars, and it like becomes this banging rock song. Just it's weird with the drum samples, you know?
Oh, I mean, it's like a straight up drum machine. This is a canned beat that one could get just by pressing a button on their Casio keyboard. And I don't know if I'm going to agree that it's weak, but it is certainly soft, and it doesn't have the sort of punch that you get with a lot of World Party's other work. But it has this sort of droning, hypnotic sort of feel. And then, yeah, it comes in and rocks considerably harder. The guitarists and guitar solos are really strong on this and a lot of the tracks on this album. And that sort of understated drum through line to the whole track comes, it's how the track opens, it's how the track closes, really lets Carl's voice and the lyrics be the focal piece. And you want to talk about themes of ecological disaster, impending ecological disaster. Well, it's right there in the title, isn't it? Is it too late? Thought it was too late.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, his voice is distinctive but familiar. And people talk a lot, I've said a couple times, about World Party's love of the Beatles and paying constant homage to the Beatles. But to my mind, his voice is way more Mick Jagger than Lennon or McCartney. And yeah, there's that sort of almost nasal brightness to it and a lot of attitude that you didn't really get so much with Paul in particular.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
So back to those environmental themes that you mentioned. So the lyrics, money rules the groove now. What we're doing here today won't make the bad life go away. And doesn't that just totally sum it up?
Oh, yeah. You got to grow the beard, find the doubt, and maybe you'll work something out. As a 20-year-old, or I guess 19-year-old when this came out, 20-year-old by the time I bought it, it speaks to the idealistic college student who's trying to figure out how to make a difference in the world. That's kind of the thing with Carl Wallinger on this album in particular. This is kind of protest music, but it's personal protest music. It always comes back to the personal. He's not fetching about specific politicians or policies. He's talking about how you and your life fits into this world that we are irrevocably fucking up. And also about himself. He's talking about his own personal life, but in the context of this world that he does not love the direction of. I read a great quote from Carl Wallinger on his own lyrics, and he says, "It's like there's this guy who writes songs. They seem to be about God, or are they about the world? I don't know, really. I'd like people to make up their own minds. I just believe in the power of a 24-track studio."
Oh, good quote.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I think this is one of those, kind of like I talked about with Black Francis in the Pixies, where he claims that there isn't a deeper meaning, and it's not true. And I think Carl Wallinger, as we look at some of the lyrics in subsequent songs, hell, even at the end of this song, at the end of Is It Too Late, he's making specific points, but he doesn't want to spoon feed it to you, and he doesn't want to make the points so granular detail that they are so of its time. He's trying to make music a little more timeless. So, at least in the outro of Is It Too Late, there's one passage spoken that I think kind of introduces this theme. "In a dream, I was crossing African plains, an elephant's graveyard, a bone-dry place, and I was wondering why there was no more rain, and in a pile of bones, I saw your face." So, like, the big ecological theme, but then bringing it back to the personal. It's about the relationships, and it is about you and me, as opposed to some of the more on-the-nose protest music where it's about this government and this policy and whatever. And I think that's what makes this album so accessible, so successful. You know, it's rooted in its time and it's looking back to a previous time, yet we can listen to it today and it feels incredibly fresh. And I think the lyrical content goes a long way to that end.
Yes. And also, I think kind of speaks to the fact that we have not evolved at all in the 34 years since.
No,
if
no,
anything, I think things have gotten worse.
We're doing a terrible job. It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. It's all right. Well,
anyway,
you know,
did that bring you down, Laurie? Would you describe yourself as way down now?
Yeah. Okay. So that's track two. This was actually the first single off of the album. Let's listen to Way Down Now.
Inside my TV, I never stop to wonder why.
I think this is actually the first song I ever heard by World Party, Scott.
Really?
Yeah. I remember seeing the video on MTV one morning. I was at my grandmother's house getting ready for school, watching MTV as I'm putting on my makeup in the mirror. And this came on and I perked up. I'm like, what is this? And then I walked in to actually watch the video and there's all this garbage flying everywhere. There's garbage chutes and the band is playing down at the bottom of the garbage chutes. But, I mean, the song itself was just freaking fantastic.
Yeah, it's kind of a banger for a rock song, yeah. It's got this huge pounding beat and even bigger guitars. The
yes.
piano player is working overtime. If your complaint, if I'm reading it right, about Is It Too Late, was that it was soft, well, this second track puts an end to that and lets you know that this album is going to be all over the board. And even within the context of just this one song, it's got that huge beat. It comes on strong. And then in the middle section of the song, it comes down and feels a lot softer, a lot more, maybe not intimate exactly, but less in your face. And a little janglier, I guess a lot more like a late 60s to mid 70s pop rock song. Pleasant and soothing, almost intimate.
And then there's that sample of Sympathy for the Devil.
All right, so yeah, that's the thing is, again, where he really clearly is a fan, not just of the Beatles, but of the Stones, because that, it's straight out of Sympathy for the Devil. And it's not the only time he does something like that on this album. The lyrics from that janglier middle section of the song are what sold me on this immediately. Now, unlike you, I had heard Private Revolution in my high school days. I was music director of my high school's radio station. And when I saw Ship of Fools, I was like, we need to be playing this on this radio station. So made that happen. So when Goodbye Jumbo came out, I was like, ooh, can't wait to see what the sophomore effort is like, and was not disappointed. The lyrics from the middle section of Way Down Now spoke to me immediately. And let's see here.
Is that the part about the clocks will all run backwards?
Oh, it's so good. Stand by. Right. So the lyrics from the middle section, for me, when I heard these for the first time, just absolutely totally sold. So fun to sing along to. The clocks will all run backwards. All the sheep will have two heads. And Thursday night and Friday will be on Tuesday night instead. And all the times will keep on changing. And the movement will increase. There's something about the living, babe, that sends me off my feet. There's breeding in the sewers, and the rats are on their way. They're clouding up the images of my perfect day, and I know I'm not alone.
Yep.
Oh, just killed me the first time, and still, if that's coming on in the car, I am absolutely singing my head off to that.
Right? You know, the lyrics that I like,
yeah.
Although I can't for the life of me understand what this is actually about.
Please.
She took us by the hand, hell was the promised land. And then I'm lying by the road because she cut off all my clothes. I have no idea what he's actually singing about there, but damn if I don't love it.
Right. Well, I think that goes to Carl's earlier quote. They seem to be about God, or are they about the world? I don't know, really. I'd like people to make up their own minds. So there's the challenge. What the hell's he talking about?
I mean, it sounds kind of like there was a relationship that left him devastated, perhaps.
Could go with that.
But, you know, who can say?
I can't.
Okay, so this, as we mentioned, was the first single off the album. The song topped the U.S. Billboard Modern Rock Tracks chart and reached number 21 on the Album Rock Tracks chart.
Yeah, really?
This was, I think, probably one of his bigger hits.
Yeah.
So one of my favorites.
For sure.
Yeah. All right, so what's next?
All right. Track number 3, When the Rainbow Comes.
Build a new house down by the sea. Get to the place we were meant to be. You'll know it when you smile. Up at the window, searching the sky. Looking for the rainbow, don't ask why. I want to see the rainbow.
Confess, I didn't remember this one when I listened to it again.
I will say the same, and I can tell you why. It's
okay.
Because track 1 is It Too Late? Track 2 is Way Down Now, and track 4 is Put the Message in the Box. And this was in the age of the CD player, so when track 3 comes on, what do?
Skip it.
Yep, we got to go to put the message in the box because that song freaking rules. So I will admit that I had not heard this one a ton either. That said, you know, it wasn't totally unfamiliar. It fades in, which is an unusual approach.
Yes.
All right, so my analysis, at least musically, of this song. Yes, he's channeling the Beatles. It does have a Beatlesque feel. But as much as that, he's channeling Jeff Lynne and Electric Light Orchestra as much as he is Paul McCartney. And now, granted, Jeff Lynne, for much of his career, was channeling Paul McCartney, and George Harrison, with whom he would collaborate in the 80s, produce his album Traveling Wilburys and all that. But again, World Party isn't just a Beatles knockoff like they were sometimes pigeonholed as. He was making pure pop, he was paying tribute to the pure pop that came before him, and sometimes giving it an ironic twist. And lyrically, he wears his influences on his sleeve in this song, and like literally 2 different quatrains in this song begin with the line, Mr. Postman, look and see. He loves him, the pop rock, and in this case, the Motown. Mr. Postman, look and see if there's a message in your bag for me. Could be a bomb or it could be a letter. It doesn't matter. It can only get better. Bit of a twist.
Yeah. It's hopeful, but not, you know, I mean, you kind of get this feeling that maybe all of this is not going to come to fruition, right? Come on, pack your bags, clear the floor. Let's step out through the open door. Leave a note that says goodbye. Build a new house down by the sea. Get to the place we were meant to be. You'll know it when you smile. You know, so here's this fantasy about this relationship. Let's run off together. Let's build a house by the sea. You know, this is what we were meant to be, but I get this feeling that it is just a fantasy that it's not going to happen.
I could see that.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's not afraid to go a little bit dark, or at least face our mortality. Another one where he just puts his influences on proud display. Slipping and sliding around in your head, it's bebop-a-lula, and then baby, you're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are a few points in this album, including and especially the closing track, where now, 2 weeks after Carl Wallinger's death, you have to be like, oh man, like he got it. He knew it would end, and he was writing music that sometimes serves as his own eulogy.
Right.
Maybe getting too much into the bebop-a-lula and then baby you're dead line, but still, we'll get to that final track and you'll see what I'm talking about.
So this one has a very distinctive backing vocal, and
yeah.
The lady's name is Sophia Ramos.
All right.
Yeah. So I guess that leads us now to the second single off the album.
The one that you skipped, The Rainbow Comes, to get to, because it's just so good.
I can tell you and I are going to have a disagreement about this one.
It seems that way.
Yeah, okay, so this is Put the Message in the Box. At number 33 on the U.S. rock chart and number 8 on the U.S. alternative chart.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
Respectable. Again, this was not a monster hit album, but the right people were listening to it, I'd say. And number 8 on the alternative, we'll call that respectable.
All right.
Now, that said, your intro made it sound like you were not in love with it.
I'm not. I am not in love with this song.
It's a country alternative rock song, which maybe is not your particular cup of tea.
You're exactly right. It's too country for me.
The jamming country guitars?
Yeah, yeah. It's just kind of, I don't know, sing-songy, I guess. I did have a misheard lyric on this one, though, that I only very recently learned was wrong.
Oh, yeah?
So, yeah, the chorus, put the message in the box, put the box into the car, drive the car around the world until you get heard.
You thought it was get hurt?
I did, yes. Because you don't usually say until you get heard, you say until you are heard. So I think that's what threw me off. Yeah, this one doesn't do anything for me. This is one that I tend to skip.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
See, this one for me, and again, as a 19, 20-year-old college student, had that message of hope and that you can change the world. It's just a matter of putting the right message out to it and that things can change. And in 1990 in particular, that was an era where that was really feeling true. I mean, yeah, in the Rolling Stone article that was really happy to find and read in doing research for this show, they talk about during the 2 days of interviews that between the first day and the second day, Nelson Mandela was freed from prison.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah, it was just that kind of a time where that kind of a huge, symbolically world-changing story was happening on the regular. So this message from this one resonated to me. And, you know, I didn't hate the Eagles back then, and so it had a sort of Eagles-y feel to it. with that jangly guitar and country rock feel. So this one spoke to me. And again, he's right up front with his influences, the sort of slow down part in the middle with the almost music boxy feel, and the lyrics, give a little bit of your love to me. Like, he's just straight up quoting Supertramp. And as a big Breakfast in America fan in my younger days, I understood that reference. And I don't know, there's a lot of that. Spot the specific reference in this album that, as a lifelong music nerd, I can really appreciate.
All right.
Yeah. The video is a combination of in-studio footage composited with 1990 video toaster era psychedelia static and colored static and other stuff coming through in a solarized sort of effect, and interspersed with footage of an elephant, the jumbo stand-in, presumably. You know, he was good at sort of reiterating the themes throughout, not just musically, but visually.
Got it.
We don't have to both love the song, but it was one of the big singles, and, you know, it's one you can still sometimes hear on your throwback satellite radio stations, happily.
All right.
And I suppose brings us to track 5, Ain't Gonna Come Till I'm Ready. It is a massive tonal shift.
Yeah.
Again, he's putting his influences right out there and making music that is a throwback, but this ain't no Beatles track. It's a sweet, yet kind of sleazy 70s funk soul groove that would be just as easily on a Sly and the Family Stone album or a Curtis Mayfield album or even Rolling Stones. And he's singing it in that high, sometimes falsetto voice. Yeah, it's music to make love to your old lady by track.
Yeah, I think it's a catchy tune. And in my notes, I have basically the things that you said, kind of has a falsetto thing going on with the verses,
yep.
A bit of funk. You had mentioned earlier Guy Chambers, and he is credited with backwards piano on this track.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm usually pretty good at picking up backwards instruments. I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
But
I didn't hear that elsewhere on the album, but that is fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, it's in the tradition, long and proud tradition of the falsetto funk soul sexy groove track. There's this one, as with a couple other points on the album, where he seems to also be kind of channeling Prince.
Yes.
Really one of his contemporaries.
Yes.
And there's another notable song kind of thematically and musically related. It reminds me a lot of Lenny Kravitz's falsetto soul track, It Ain't Over Till It's Over. And I had to double check, and yeah, that track would not come out until the next year, 1991. So, you know, for all of this talk of being a musical throwback artist, Carl Wallinger and World Party were doing some pretty fresh stuff that other contemporary soul artists were doing at the same time. Big respect.
I remember the first time I heard this song, I actually thought it was a black guy singing. I mean, I really didn't realize at first that this was Carl.
Yeah. Sometimes the song can get cryptic in a somewhat provocative way. Verse 1. There are things I don't need. You take slaves when you make us free. when you make us free your way. The second verse, I'll get even someday. You've got it perfect now if you realize that sometimes you have to be nice or there'll be hell to pay. Okay, so like the chorus, ain't gonna come till I'm ready, ain't gonna come till I'm ready. Oh yeah, like it just feels sleazy bedroom. But the verses where he's actually doing the talking, it doesn't really seem to be about that. I don't know. There are layers. And I don't know what to make of them other than Carl's just making a good funk soul song.
There you go.
Go with it.
Yeah. Okay, then the next track after this one is a ballad. It's called And I Fell Back Alone.
Whoever you were then, I never really knew. You got no need to know me now. You can't see the bottom from the top. You don't see the edge before you drop.
This one, boy, this one really hit me as I'm listening to the lyrics. I mean, it's about the end of a relationship, right? You don't have to tell me that it's over. Whoever you were then, I never really knew. And you got no need to know me now. And there's another great line later on, but how can two souls still eat together when life has lost its taste? And I'm just envisioning a couple, you know, sitting at the dining room table eating and not communicating, right? Just kind of this awkwardness between them. And that really comes through in the lyrics of this song.
Yeah. Even the two lines leading up to the ones you said, forever doesn't mean forever. It just means some other time or place. Yeah. If you've been in that relationship, and you know I have, you hear that and it just guts you. You know that break of the relationship that you're not supposed to be in anymore. And that's a rough one.
Yeah.
Musically, it opens so simple and it feels stripped down and spare. Vocals, acoustic guitar, piano, bass, and drums. And like, it feels less than that. And part of it is it's got this big reverb room that it's taking place in. The vocals make it feel intimate and yet distant, if that's a thing you can do. Like, he's singing about an incredibly personal heartbreak, and yet there's a distance there that makes you feel it more. I don't know. This one really hit me.
Yeah. There's one other lyric that I want to highlight real quick, because it's repeated a few times. You can't see the bottom from the top. You don't see the edge before you drop. And I fell back alone. And I fell back alone. When you're in a new relationship, especially, and you're on the high, right? I mean, it's a euphoria. And you don't see the bottom, right? You're at the top and that's all you can see. And it never occurs to you, even though it happens every time, it never occurs to you that you're going to fall off the edge, right? That the relationship is going to take a nosedive, but it always does.
Always?
Okay, well, maybe my current relationship is the exception. But
Same. And, you know, it feels, like I said, sort of spare, stripped down, but then it does build. The keys come in, it fills, it gets bigger. It is a very sweet and very sad song. But he throws the musical tricks at it to tug at the heartstrings, not just lyrically, but musically. That's all we have to say about that one.
Okay.
The next track, track 7, Take It Up.
Breakfast when I thought I heard it say.
is this song about, Scott?
About? Oh, boy. Let's get those lyrics real quick.
Beating out of the town, I thought I'd lost my way, till I saw the green and ebony come a-wondering about their pay. Okay, the ebony I get. The green?
Duh.
I mean, unless they mean like green as in like green, you know, like new, like, you know, they're new at their job or whatever. I don't know. This one definitely has a bit of a, like a country vibe too, doesn't it? And it's got Steve Wickham on violin.
Yeah. For me, I guess if I'm honest, I didn't even notice the lyrics of this song.
Okay.
I was so in the music. Again, keep hitting on his much talked about love of and homage to the Beatles. This one feels as much Wings as it does Beatles, or again, maybe more George Harrison and ELO musically. I did read a funny bit about him when he was talking about those influences. Like, he's an unabashed lover, or he was an unabashed lover of the Beatles and Paul in particular. But in talking about Wings, you know, if you talk about Paul McCartney and the Beatles, eventually you will get to Wings. And he said, I really thought Paul had died when he started Wings, he jokes. I thought, this guy must be a lookalike. And yet, I would say this song feels a lot more Wings than it does Beatles. And for all the sometimes misfires Wings had, there were some real gems in that catalog. And I'd say this is more in that tradition.
Okay.
It's not the strongest track on the album by any means. But when you hear that reversed reverb synth outro, you can't tell me that this track isn't made with the love of that 70s rock. Oh, I've been talking every episode that I have been on so far about mine and my friend Rick's theory about song 7.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one doesn't. This one doesn't really. Oh, back
theory.
That.
I was
this
wondering.
One does not back that theory up, as it turns
no.
out.
Okay.
You know, it's okay. It's a good song. It's well crafted. But in the context of this album, it is not the strongest.
Right. So the next song is God on My Side.
In your strange caps and clothing, shouting, I don't understand. But you look so loaded. It's something I can't feel. I'm into some God action. Maybe yours is real. 'Cause I'm
of this one, Scott.
This one is just straight up Paul McCartney Beatles, but with Bob Dylan lyrics.
Okay.
And by way of ELO, with the absolutely huge harmonies. Like, Jeff Lynne was oftentimes criticized for just making these ridiculous 12-part harmonies, and Carl is absolutely emulating that here. But that's really a throwback to Sgt. Pepper's era Beatles, but bigger.
I mean, it's almost like a gospel-like backing vocal the way the song is layered.
Yep, yep, for sure. But with those lyrics, where he seems channeling a bit of Bob Dylan, where I said earlier, oftentimes Carl Wellinger is doing the big issues, but making them personal without too specifically about politics. This one is the exception to that rule.
Yes.
The one where he really gets into it. Well, I see you objecting so strongly to the ways of the liberal disease and your armchair satisfaction as you narrow the meaning of free. You know, he's willing to get into it in specific terms, and he is speaking to a specific oppressor. I dream of a home that is tidy and a church full of money bees. Then I wonder about the suppression that you get when you're down on your knees and I'm falling.
And this could have just as easily been written in 2024.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting how the lyrics kind of change a little bit as the song goes on, because for the first few verses, he's singing, I need your God on my side. But it seems like maybe he's searching for something. Like he's trying out different belief systems and trying to find the one that is right for him. We need their God on our side. In search of him, I will roam. Need our God on our side. Mine got up and left home. You need our God on your side. So it flips. It flips. You know, it's like, I need your God on my side to eventually, you need our God on your side. It's interesting.
I'm with you. The searcher finding the proselytizer and not being super impressed with what he finds.
Yeah, I have relatable.
I feel ya.
Yeah. Oh, the next one's a fun one. Do you want to introduce the next one?
All right. Track 9, Show Me to the Top.
So earlier we were talking about songs that kind of bring the funk, and this one, I swear, he's channeling Prince.
Oh, for sure. Like the earlier track, Ain't Gonna Come Until I'm Ready, is like, okay, this is kind of Curtis Mayfield or Sly and the Family Stone, but also some Prince. Yeah, Show Me to the Top is just straight up Prince. This is late 80s, early 90s funk, and this track would fit right in on Prince's Sign of the Times.
Love is a fruit, baby. That's no lie. Love is a fruit. So come on and be a fly.
You can get a little sleazy, but in a, you know, metaphorical way.
Yeah. So are those flute samples or is that an actual flute? Because I didn't see anybody credited with flute on the album, but that doesn't mean, you know, Carl could have played it.
Yeah, I'm going to say that's keyboard.
Okay.
Just something out of the synth library, but yeah.
It definitely sound like they're pitch shifting Carl's voice, though.
Absolutely, which Prince did as well.
Okay.
To get it higher and a little more nasal, just take it up a little bit. Yeah, like this trick could be, it sounds a lot like Thieves in the Temple, which actually came out that same year. So what I was saying earlier, he wasn't just doing throwback funk or soul. He was able to make stuff that feels right there, like it's right there by one of the funk greats of the time. And we don't think of World Party as that kind of a band, but right. He was all over the board with his influences and could play with the best of them. He was an amazing musician, great vocalist, and a hell of a good producer. But yeah, musically, it's got a lot. The pipes, a guitar-style bass, that organ, and, you know, it's got that steady funk downbeat on the one. That's a good funk track, man. I dig it.
Yeah. There's also an untitled hidden track in there, too. At about 4 minutes and 42 seconds.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Can we play a little sample of that? Because I may not have noticed it.
Wish I knew, wish I knew. Wish I knew, wish I knew.
Huh. Yeah, that snuck right past me. Gentle, folky little ditty where he just wishes he knew. That is a strange counterpoint to the sort of a bangin' funk song.
Yeah.
Well, I've learned something today.
And knowing's half the battle. All right.
All right. That brings us to track 10. We're getting deep into this album of only 12 songs and 53 minutes. What do we got?
The next one is called Love Street. Let's listen.
Have you ever been to Love Street? Have you tried on all the shoes? Therefore, walking on the clouds with a not foot down here in the blues. You know, dreams.
So this is another ballad.
And so sweet. Oh,
it
man.
It is.
You can see this being so many people's first wedding dance song in 1990. It's a straight-up ballad. It's also got that waltzy 3, probably 6/8 time signature thing going. And just so much sweetness. It starts quiet and calm, and then it builds.
I was walking with the lonely before you came into my heart. Showed me round your love street, took me naked from the dark. Well, you're touching my soul. Don't let me go. You're calling out to me. I'm turning to gold. That is really beautiful.
So beautiful.
Yeah.
Close your eyes. Close your eyes. Close your eyes and walk down that street in your mind. And then a guitar solo, the obligatory 80s guitar solo, comes in, and it legitimately rips. In the context of a very sweet ballad, the guitar just goes, and it's a Prince-style guitar solo again.
Yeah, yeah. Come to think of it, it is. You're right.
Yeah. I kind of wonder what, if anything, Prince thought about this, if he thought about it at all. Did Goodbye Jumbo make it onto Prince's radar? And did he consider imitation the sincerest form of flattery? I would hope. Because clearly, Carl had some respect for Prince.
Yeah.
I would hope it would be a two-way street.
Well, shall we move on to the next track?
May as well. Track 11, Sweet Soul Dream.
Give you all my money, abandon that beautiful girl, take my books, my choicest looks, and burn them all today. I got rare 61 Beatles, I got a film of my dreams. But I lose them all, burn them all, go alone without all of it, give up.
So the first thing worth noting here is this is credited to World Party with Sinead O'Connor.
Oh, well, well.
They had collaborated previously, but I got to tell you, I listened to this several times and I am not hearing her voice. She must be buried way down in the mix because I am not hearing her.
Huh. She's credited as a vocalist, not a songwriter?
Correct.
Yeah, I got nothing there. In doing some additional background research for this album, I was watching a couple of the videos from the Private Revolution album, including Private Revolution, the title track, and I had forgotten exactly how prominently featured Sinead was on that track. But that's something we'll talk about later for some of our more special subscribers.
Yeah, we're going to do a Patreon only little
bonus feature.
Yes, a bonus. Okay, so this one also includes a harmonium. I know that this is something that we've talked about in a few other episodes. This harmonium just keeps coming up.
You love a harmonium.
Yeah. The lyrics feel very religious to me. You can take all my postcards and letters, my loves and my good memories. Well, I'd lose them all, burn them all, go without all of it. Give up the chances I see if you'd raise me up, take me up. Let me know the heart of it. Give me your sweet soul dream. He's saying, I would give up everything if you would just take me up, you know? And to me, that feels very religious.
Yeah. And one of the things that he's willing to sacrifice for that religion, take my books, my choicest looks, and burn them all today. I've got rare 61 Beatles. I've got a film of my dreams. But I'd lose them all, burn them all, go along without all of it. Give up the chances I see if you'd take me up, raise me up, let me know the heart of it. Give me your sweet soul dream.
He's got rare 61 Beatles. That's really early.
And he's willing to give it up. He's willing to set fire to everything.
Yeah. Interesting. And I know you love a harmonium. For me... this was the point at which I considered the album to maybe be dragging just a little bit.
A little bit.
I know. If this is the worst song on the album, though, you're dealing with a pretty amazing album, because it is good. It's just maybe not as great as some of the other real standout tracks. But
anything else about Sweet Soul Dream?
No, I think we're tearing to it to get to the pretty important closer that I think in the context of Carl Wallinger's recent death has taken on a whole new level of meaning. Prescience.
Yes, you're talking about Thank You World.
Yes.
Time around me stretches back and forth across the years. Was I sent to see a beauty just to please my aching heart? Oh, I want to say good morning, but I don't know where to start. Thank you, world. 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 Thank you, world.
Now, this one I just found out was released as a single, too. I didn't realize that.
That I had no idea. Yeah, it did not apparently go all that far as a single. If we, who were relatively interested in this album, didn't even know about it. Well, what do you got on Thank You World?
This is where my notes kind of drop off, other than saying it starts with some hard rocking guitar. But it is. It is a thank you note. It is just like it says, thank you, world. It's to the world, to the universe.
You know? It's a love letter. It's a love letter to life and the world we live in.
Yeah.
In his own life. Again, it's sort of a beautiful self-eulogy written 34 years before his passing. Thank you, world, for giving me my children. And thank you, world, for keeping me alive. Hell, man.
Yeah, that kind of gave me the chills just then.
Put that on his headstone, hopefully.
Yeah. This is really kind of representative of his musical leanings and his musical style. I mean, it's like all combined into this song, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So that's probably a good way to end the album, I think.
Yeah. This is another one, you know, I've tried to make the argument that his influences were many, but he will sometimes just talk about the big one. And when he is saying, and this, let's see here. Well, I'm lying in the dew and I'm staring at the stars. Yeah, he laid me down this blanket. Now I call this blanket grass. And the sun is my alarm and the moon, she makes me dream. And my food is wild honey pie and water from the stream. Thank you, world. Again, this beautiful imagery.
Gorgeous.
Of laying down in nature, And then just straight up saying, my food is Wild Honey Pie. Wild Honey Pie being a Beatles track from the White Album. He's willing to just say, man, hey, this is what nourished me. And yeah, unabashed Beatles fan, Carl.
So that brings us to the end of this album. And I think a really, really good kind of retrospective on Carl's songwriting, singing, musicianship.
On his biggest album.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, see, I'll save my other story for our little bonus content for our subscribers. So,
right on.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say in conclusion about this particular album?
It was an album that a lot of people slept on. As we said, album charted 73. It peaked in the Billboard 200 albums chart in 1990. So a lot of people missed it the first time around. And now with Carl Wallinger's death bringing him back into a lot of people's consciousness, or maybe for the first time, it is an album absolutely worth revisiting. You got little snippets of it listening to us here. Give this album a listen. It's a good headphones album. It's a good driving album. It is definitely worth a revisit, or maybe a visit for the first time if you missed it the first time around.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So what are we doing in 2 weeks? Have we decided? Are we going to do Heaven or Las Vegas?
Hell, I'm game.
All right.
Gary, cool. Gary?
That was Gary.
Great suggestion, Gary. We're not always going to be doing requests, but that's an easy request to oblige.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites from 1990, so that's fantastic. Okay, so we're going to end this episode, but again, we are going to have some special bonus content for our Patreon subscribers. So make a little donation and then you can check it out. Goodbye from me.
And from me, Scott Free.